Hey guys, real quick before we get started, we are doing a free giveaway for listeners between now and May 31st. Cash prizes, free swag, yacht meetup tickets, San Diego Padre tickets, and more. All you got to do to qualify is go to Spotify or Apple Podcasts and drop a 5-star review. Send a screenshot to giveaway@summerscapital.com and we'll be selecting lucky winners May 31st. As always, I appreciate the support. Now let's jump into the show.
I wouldn't hire anyone that is not using AI right now.
Yeah. That's
nobody.
Powerful.
Nobody. People say AI is going to replace people.
Yeah.
In the next 5 years, I think that people that use AI is going to replace people that does not use AI. So I wouldn't hire anyone that is opposite to technology, is opposite to AI, or does not know the basics of AI.
Welcome to the Rich Summers Report, where we talk real estate, business, and wealth building, all while keeping it real. No fluff, no BS. I hope that you enjoy the show.
All right, guys, welcome to another episode of the Report. Today, I got a guest who actually met recently out in Orlando at Tyler Devereaux's multifamily conference, a little speaking event, and got to connect, talk a little shop, drink a little wine, and next thing you know, she's out here in San Diego. We're hanging, and she's hitting the meetup tonight. I got Vanessa Alfaro. Vanessa, welcome to the show.
Hi, Rich. I'm so happy to be there. I'm so glad to be in this chair where you have so many great people sitting, too.
I appreciate you taking the time to come out, and excited that you'll be at the meetup this evening. But I got to ask you, you're from Venezuela. How long ago did you move out here from Venezuela?
More than a decade ago.
Mm.
I moved from Venezuela to Panama. In Venezuela, I had my first company it was a marketing company. And I opened that when I was 22 years old. I sold that company when I was 27 years old. By the time I sold the company, I was already in Panama City. And I had two other companies there. And then I met my husband.
Yeah.
And I moved to here to the U.S.
Why did you move to Panama City?
Interesting story. I had my company at the valuation of the Bolivar. It was crazy. I was making more money. And when I went transferring the money to dollars, it was nothing. Okay. So we decided to expand the company in a different country. It was Venezuela or Puerto Rico. And it was Panama or Puerto Rico. And Panama, they had great opportunities for new business to go in. And then my ex-husband was kidnapped in Venezuela.
That is crazy.
Yes. And I had my daughter.
How does a man get kidnapped?
He was entering his house and just two guys. I saw everything on the camera.
Mm.
Two guys went on his car. They opened both of the doors. One guy took him. The other guy took the other, his friend. Okay. With the guns. They put him in another car. They left the car and they took my ex-husband.
Where did they take him?
He had a company, a big company.
Okay.
And I had a big company. My marketing company became one of the biggest company in Venezuela. So at that point, I was using security people as well with me, but he didn't. He was using a gun,
mm-hmm.
but the gun was not protecting him to be kidnapped. And he was kidnapped for about a week. And then when he was released, he immediately called me and he said, "You have to get out of here." I took my daughter the next day. Took her out of school, and I flew to Panama. And I was opening the other company in Panama already. I told my VP who was moving to Panama, I told him, "You're not moving, you're staying. I'm moving, and you're staying in Venezuela." So I took my daughter there, and then I was like, for 6 months, I was traveling back and forth.
What did you think the entire week that your husband was like before he got out
know.
And hit you up? You had no idea?
I didn't know.
What was going through your
because
mind?
Because we were not married at that time. I didn't know he was kidnapped. And then I show up at school Monday. I didn't know. I show up at school that Monday and I was talking to my friend and he was like, "How are you feeling about your husband?" I was like, "What are you talking about?" My ex-husband at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Like, "Well, the kidnapping thing." It's like, "What?" He was kidnapped and I didn't know. And the family didn't tell me. I don't know. They didn't want to worry me. But he was released a day after that.
Wow.
So for me, it was just 24 hours of agony just to know what was going to happen to him or to us as well, because we were at risk. Okay.
Now, how come your husband wanted you to leave, but then he decided to stay? Is that because he had a business to run?
He had a business, and we were more worried about my daughter. She was 5 at that time. And since we both were very well known in the country and we had successful companies, we're like, they were going to take probably our daughter next.
That's crazy. And what did your husband say they did to him for the entire week?
He didn't give me details, but they said that they were talking things that they were going to do to him or to his family. They asked for money, of course, so the family had to pay some money to release him.
That's crazy. So, you know, I know there's some dangerous things going on in Venezuela, and the economy right now is not the steadiest, but at one point it was the best economy in South America and one of the best in the world. Jack McCall was recently on the podcast, and he's actually going down to South America, and he's going to spend quite a bit of time skydiving in Venezuela. He was down there like 2 months ago, and I was like, Jack, what are you doing in Venezuela, man? Like, I don't know anyone that goes down there, especially from America. And he's like, dude, I come down here to skydive. It's good vibes. He's like, if you stay in the good part of the town, he's like, it's amazing. The culture, the food, the people. And he's like, no issues at all. He just said, you got to get a visa as an American. And he said, you know, because you're an American, you show up to customs. They kind of look at you a little bit funny and they kind of interrogate
you
a little
bit more.
They
don't like Americans there.
What's that?
They don't like Americans there.
Yeah.
Yeah. The government don't like Americans because the government never like America. The government always have an issue with American and American has been always trying some way or the other to help Venezuela very lightly. And the communism and everything that happened with Chavez and now Maduro. So they don't like Americans. They don't like their relationship with America. So you have to be very careful. I've never been back for the last 15 years to that country. And if I love my country, when I left Venezuela, the inflation was 45%. And my company was making a lot of money.
Well, inflation was 45% a year?
Inflation was 45%.
Wow.
Right now, if you check Venezuela, inflation is 250-something percent.
That's insane.
And people are still making money in that country. People still have businesses. People still can make money. They have retails. I believe this is going to be an opportunity for real estate also.
Right. In Venezuela?
At one point, it's going to be an opportunity for real estate because this government is not going to be there forever.
Okay, so I'm looking up the inflation rate in Venezuela, and this goes back all the way to 1985. Back in the 80s, it was like 10-11%, 16% late 90s, and then, 438% in 2017, 2023, 359%.
So
that's crazy.
Check 2000. What was 2000 the inflation? 2000 was 2005.
2001 was 12.5. 2005 was 2007 was 31%.
Okay, that's average when I left Venezuela.
That's crazy.
31 to 40 something percent, and my company was still making money. The reason I at one point, the company had to close. It was a very big marketing company. We had 2,500 employees.
2,500 what?
2,500 employees.
Okay.
In the company, 17 offices around the country. Our biggest client, okay, they couldn't have product coming in the country. So we were doing sales and marketing, and they didn't have anything to sell. They didn't have anything to market. So we actually closed the company.
So when I was down in Colombia, I've been to Colombia a few times now, but every time I go, I meet a lot of Venezuelans that have migrated over to Colombia, and they're like the nicest people ever, super friendly, all good vibes. And a lot of them just fled because of the same reasons that you're mentioning. They said like, because of the inflation, they're not able to go work. I mean, they work 2-3 jobs and they can't even afford to pay a 1-bedroom apartment. It's just not feasible. And so, you know, I'd be curious to see what their population decline has been over the last 20 years. That's got to be a whole nother metric.
It has declined a lot. And there is a big gap in between the rich and the poor right now. But the other thing about Venezuela, and when you grow up in that country, it's a country of entrepreneurship. People grew up with this idea of that everybody can make money with something. Okay. So I grew up very poor. Like my family was not family of money. My mom was a teacher. My dad didn't even make it to finish high school. But my mom always encouraged me to have some type of entrepreneurial spirit, okay, to do something, to make dolls, to make like bracelets, like to make my own money.
Yeah.
And it's in the culture. You don't grow up with the idea that you have to have a 9-to-5. Everybody can make a business, and it's not like a moonshot. It's not a crazy idea. So that's something that I, especially for me, that I have moved and I have lived to already 3 or 4 countries already, and I have built companies in different countries. I see that spirit in Venezuela. We are resilient. You can throw Venezuela in the middle of somewhere around the world,
yeah,
and we can make a company. Okay. It's in our blood, I think. So I think that's different. That's cool. And that's why so many Venezuelans have just like come to any country, and some way or the other, they thrive.
As a Venezuelan, is it relatively easy, or is it challenging to leave the country right now?
It is very challenging.
It is.
Yeah, because you cannot get a visa. You have to, people has to cross the country walking or bus or trying to escape some way or the other. There's very little flights going to Venezuela. So if you have to go to Venezuela, probably there's 1 or 2 airlines that travel to Venezuela.
So you were in Caracas. Mm-hmm. So from Caracas, where are your options? You maybe fly into like Bogota?
Yes.
Or Panama?
That's a very interesting question. I don't know, because I haven't been there for 15 years.
Because I was asking Jack, I said, hey, dude, I'll come down and visit you for a weekend. And he said, well...
You guys are crazy. Not...
But so
I'm
for me,
so
okay,
scared
listen, for
to
me,
go to Venezuela.
Listen, for me, I love traveling to, countries and cities that a lot of people from America otherwise would, maybe not visit in a lifetime. Most people probably would not visit in a lifetime, or maybe most people view as dangerous, quote unquote, because it's exotic. And the more exotic, the better for me. And that's kind of the more exotic, the bigger shift in perspective when I travel, right? And so... I actually enjoy going into some of these areas. Now, I've never been to a place like Venezuela. I've been to Ukraine.
Wow.
I've been to, Brazil, Colombia, some of these areas, which I don't think are very dangerous. However, like when I went to Rio, people are like, oh, Rio is very like dangerous. Be very careful. So I don't know. But my biggest takeaway is this. When I travel to all these areas where people think are like dangerous and like, I'll never go there. I always have a good experience. You know, I'm a respectful person. I try to stay out of trouble, keep my nose clean, if you would, and stay in good parts of the town. But, sometimes you might end up in a rougher area, and, it definitely does something to the perspective, when you travel. You know, for example, if you just go to, Salt Lake City for vacation, or you go to, Scottsdale, Arizona, it's like, yeah, it's cool. It's a little getaway, but you're not really changing perspective for your mind. Right. And so when I go to some of these weird areas that a lot of people don't go to, like, Antalya, Turkey, or Kash, Turkey, or Kiev, Ukraine, and maybe now we'll go to Caracas. Like, it's definitely going to change the perspective. So, anyways, that's
Morocco is beautiful. Morocco is beautiful.
Morocco,
yes,
I'd love to go to Morocco.
Yes,
I've never been, but I've seen some photos.
That's
and it looks
a place
gorgeous.
That you have to go.
Yeah,
yeah.
What's your favorite thing to do there?
It was just seeing the people, the streets. The It's just so different to what you see in the U.S. or in South America.
Yeah.
It's a different world. I love Morocco.
Yeah. I definitely want to check it out. It's so close to Spain too. I've been to Madrid, and I know if you go south of Spain, you can take a boat ride over to Morocco.
Yes.
I believe. And I have not done that. But
yeah. My family live in Spain.
Really?
Yeah. My mom, my sister, they just, everybody left Venezuela and
they all went to Spain. You came to U.S.
Yes, I came to Panama, and then I came to the U.S. But when I was there, I grew up in Venezuela. I left when I was 27. But I had to learn. I went through so many things, like the kidnapping, people trying to kidnap me. So you learn how to be on your defense all the time. So when you're driving, you have to think, when you're stopping, what are your escape areas? You get trained to live in that country.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the level of anxiety that I was living. Every time I was driving, how can I escape if something happened here in the middle of the traffic? Where do you have to go if you're in traffic, the line? Where do you park? It is very stressful to live a life like
that. Yeah, absolutely. And as a man... that has tattoos, that wear a ball cap, I have a beard, I probably don't need to worry about it as much as a woman. Now, being a woman, that's a whole different thing you got to think about and worry about. That's a real threat. But for whatever reason, like when I travel, I never have issues. I'm very respectful to everyone. You know, I never run my mouth and I'm just very respectful. Never have issues. But same token, like some of these areas, I have seen, you know, people get pickpocketed. I've seen...
That happened a lot in Spain.
Like, for example, I'll give
you
an example.
That happens a lot in Spain.
I'll give an example. Yeah. One time in Madrid, this is when I was younger. I was out there visiting a friend who was studying abroad. And so I went out there for 2 weeks. And there was like a back alley. We were like coming back late night or whatever. And two other men came up to me and they said, "Hey, do you like soccer? We want to show you a soccer move." And so one guy's like trying to show me a soccer move. The other guy's trying to like go to my back pocket and take my wallet. Luckily they weren't able to get it and I got away. But yeah, I mean, you see that because you see some of that stuff. I'll give you a good example. I was in Medellin, Colombia, and some of the listeners might be thinking, oh, it's pronounced Medellin. It's Medellin. And anyhow, so I'm there hanging out. One of my favorite cities in the world, by the way. The people, the culture, the vibe, the food.
100%.
It's a big valley. And when you land at the airport, you actually drive through this mountainside. And they actually have a tunnel now. You used to go around this mountain, but now you go through this tunnel right through the middle of the mountain. And then you come out on the other side. And if you go in there in the evening, you literally will drive through this mountainside and you pop up. It's all dark. And all of a sudden you pop through the other side of the tunnel and you see this big valley with 5 million people and all the lights. And it's just gorgeous. And like daytime, it's green. And no matter where you are in the valley, you got a really, really cool view of everything. The weather never gets colder than 60 degrees, never gets hotter than 80 degrees. There's no humidity. They call it the gateway to South America. And oh my gosh, I love it there. But anyhow.
Colombia is a very safe place,
by the way.
Very safe. People think they was not. Mm-hmm. It wasn't in the 80s, but it's a very safe place to go right now.
It is, which ironically, 30 years ago, it was the murder capital of the world. And you go there now and, you know, they really cleaned it up. It's gentrified and you got some of the nicest people in the world. And it is actually one of the safest cities in the world now. I mean, it is. From a crime perspective, they said Medellin is safer than a lot of major U.S. cities.
In the U.S.
Chicago, Baltimore, San Francisco. And so that's something pretty telling. You know, here in the U.S., you got mass shootings. You don't have that in a lot of countries, right?
That doesn't happen in Latin America, unfortunately.
There's mass shootings at elementary schools, middle schools. You go to a movie theater and there's mass shootings. That's something that most of the world doesn't have to worry about.
Yeah.
So talk about danger.
Yes, that's true. And that creates a lot of anxiety for me too, especially since I have five kids. But in Latin America, as I said, that doesn't happen. Mass shootings you can see a lot of crime, but mass shootings, that doesn't happen in Latin America. You can research, and I don't think we can find a mass shooting like in school or in a theater, something that happened here.
I mean, even going to a country music concert, there's been mass shootings. And so it's like, you know, I would argue, ironically, a lot of folks that are here in America, they say, oh, don't travel here. Don't travel to those countries. They're too dangerous. But I would argue America is more dangerous than 99% of the countries out there. And I strongly believe that.
You are giving me anxiety right now.
Now, you know, like most places, you
it
have
is
good,
true
you
because
have
I think about
areas.
That all the time.
Yes.
Okay. That's why I live where I live. I moved from Beverly Hills to Houston because I'm sober in Houston. I want to be quiet where there is not a lot of people because I have all these small kids. And creates a lot of anxiety. The school, I'm always involved on how the school is working in security, what is it half around. And I have a master on that from coming from Venezuela, but it's a different type of danger. Okay.
Yeah.
You are completely right. We are not safe anywhere at the end. We're not safe anywhere. Things happen in Europe. Okay. That doesn't happen here. Okay. All the bombs, and there is a bomb in a train, and there is a bomb here. Okay. And if it's like other countries, they had other type of crimes. So I think we are not 100% safe anywhere.
If you love real estate investing, passive income, and tax benefits, but don't have the time, my company, Summers Capital, is buying boutique hotels right now. We source the deals, we renovate the properties, and we even handle all the day-to-day management, making it truly hands-off for our investors. If you want to learn more to see if we can help you, visit summerscapital.com/invest to book a call with our team. Again, that's summerscapital.com/invest. Now back to the show.
You're right.
And one more thing is the homeless out here in Southern California is a real issue because the weather is good year round. If you look at areas like San Francisco, you have a major issue. Unfortunately, I think a lot of these liberal cities in America, you have a big homeless issue. You got a big drug problem that comes with it. San Diego, downtown San Diego, it's been a thing since COVID. East Village, East County, not East County, but East Village, San Diego, downtown, there's been a ton of homeless. And, you know, that's sometimes most of them are fine, but every now and then you get some crazy ones. And sometimes you're driving home late at night in downtown and it could be like the zombie apocalypse out here. You got, you know, naked dudes walking down a street with no clothes on and, you know, yelling at random cars and people. And, you know, that's not, I don't know. You don't see that when I travel to these other countries, I don't see a whole lot of that, to be honest with you. And so, I think when folks say, hey, don't visit these other countries, it's like, well, you know, America's not exactly the safest either.
Yeah. I have been involved in an organization called Invisible People for a long time.
I've heard of it. What does it do?
Yeah.
What do you guys do?
They create content. Invisible People is focused on creating content to educate society and the government about the homeless issue in the United States and around the world too, and how to solve the issue in a bigger perspective, not just like feeding the homeless or just giving them a place to sleep for the night. So Mark, which is a founder, I met him many years ago. He has been focused on working with the governments on how to create the infrastructure and really the support that the homeless need in order to get out of homelessness. And I have personally walked the streets of Skyrock with him, personally a few times. And I understand that the issue is bigger of what we think. It is. I don't like to see the homeless. I mean, one of the reasons I moved from LA is because every time I was going to Santa Monica to take my kids to the beach, I would find a homeless naked there. I was like, this is not a place to raise my kids. And even in Beverly Hills, the police has a terrible policy. They drive the homeless out of Beverly Hills to the LA area, just across the street. They just take them out of Beverly Hills. They don't want to see homeless in Beverly Hills. And it's the only city where they cannot put a tent in front of a house. But so what they do is that they drive them out of the city. But that's not going to solve the problem. That's not going to help the mental health issue that they have. So it's a big issue. I invite everybody to check Invisible People channel. He has a lot of education tools because he wants to educate the society of, if you want to help this issue, this is how you can do it. Okay. And we also have, when we live in here in the LA, we used to have packs of what their needs actually are for the homeless. So as we were driving, we have a special bag with some soft food that they need, some water, socks that are very important for the homeless.
Yes.
You probably a blanket, but they need socks, they need blankets, they need soft food because they cannot chew hard food like bars or things like that. They cannot eat things like that and water.
That's amazing that you guys do that. About 5 years ago, Governor Newsom passed a bill to where they were going to fund $5 billion of taxpayer money in the state of California to address the homeless issue. And if you look at the homeless population in California over the last 5 years, that's actually gone up by 25 or 30% over those 5 years. And so my question is, where is that $5 billion going?
I have no idea where it went, but I can tell you that one of the biggest reasons the government is not able to support the homeless and to build infrastructure like Finland, they have all these buildings where they support the homeless for a year. They found in a place where they have to work and blah, 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 blah. But people, society don't want a building of homeless in their area. So whatever the government wants to build something on someone, actually private organizations want to build something and place the homeless there to help them. society don't want them there. So they voted to take people out, and it's a very complicated issue. And that's what I think I like. That's why I like Invisible People, because he's able to show people this is what's happening with these people. This is how you really want to help homelessness and end homelessness. This is how you can do it.
So what do you think the real solution is? So like obviously here in California, it has the highest population of homeless in the whole entire country out of any state. What would you do to solve it?
Well, I would like to be the expert to answer this question. Probably you should have Mark in this podcast. He would be awesome guest for you. But I think doing something like Finland, that country did, where they created all these apartments, which is not a tiny home. Okay, it's a real apartment where they can get a job for a year, and they get up their feet, and they help with the medical. They offer what they need, because really these people, imagine someone that is leaving their car with two kids, they have to have a job. How this person is going to have a job? They cannot even shower. They don't have clothes to show up in that work. Okay. Who is going to hire them? They don't have an address. It's extremely hard for them to get up in their feet. And Mark was actually a homeless himself. So he's very passionate about that.
Yeah. That's crazy. He was homeless. And
he
then
was a
he
homeless.
Built all this.
And he built all this.
Wow,
and that's what he does.
Him.
And he's how doing did, it very successful.
How did he get off his feet?
He was an alcoholic and he was a homeless. And I don't know who helped him, but someone helped him at one point, and he decided that his mission was going to help the government to change and to end homelessness.
Wow.
Yeah.
I got to meet Mark.
Yes. I'm going to put Mark in contact with you. I met him about 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I was actually in Venezuela and in Panama with my second company. And I was very involved on how to use social media. My company was one of the pioneers to use social media for businesses.
Really?
So, yeah, by the time Twitter was there, okay, we were one of the first to use of using Twitter. Actually, Jack Dorsey opened my Twitter account, okay? And I met Jack with Mark.
Okay. Okay?
We were all invited to a small summit about leaders to change the world using social media. And that was Mark, it was Scott, the founder of Meetup, it was Jack, some people from Twitter and Facebook, blah, blah, blah. And we went to Mexico, and went to Mexico, to went Peru, blah, blah, et cetera, et cetera. So my company was very involved in using social media, Facebook and all these digital platforms for businesses. And since I've been always involved in nonprofits, I was using also that for helping one of the nonprofits that I was related, which was a nonprofit about kids.
Mm.
And that's how I get connected with all these people in the tech world. And I became very passionate about technology. And my company actually opened a Twitter account for two former presidents.
Really? Which presidents?
Ricardo Martinelli.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I think he's going to run now for Panama as well. His wife. And Martin Torrijos, too.
I love that. I've never been to Panama, and I want to go. I hear good things about it.
Oh, it's incredible. You should go. It's a safe place. It's a small country, beautiful people, beautiful culture, happy people. I was very lucky, honestly. I moved from Venezuela to Panama. I started two companies from zero without knowing anybody there. And I get to meet very, very good people. I met Ricardo. I think he's running again for president. It's an interesting story. He went to jail.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
After that.
Whoa. For what?
Well, misuse of funds, I guess.
Using campaign funds to fund some illegal activity or what?
I don't know. The same thing that everybody else do, but he's vice president, run for president. He won, and then he threw him on the bus.
Wow, that's crazy.
He put him in jail.
Oh, my gosh, that's insane. I got to get out there and check it out. I hear great things. And, I love Latin America and South America. It's just great vibes. I've always loved the food and the people. And I was like practicing my Spanish. Mi español es muy mal.
Oh my goodness, hablas español.
But I like to practice. Every time I go for a little bit, I start to pick it up a little bit. I don't speak it at all here in San Diego or in the States. And so I'd love to go back and...
Well, you know what?
What's that?
I'm happy to introduce you with Ricardo Martinelli, and you can probably have a very interesting podcast
really?
With him. Yes,
you think
of
if
course.
I flew down there, he would do a podcast?
Oh, yeah,
really?
Sure. Yeah,
oh,
he's a very
that.
Good friend of mine.
I would
mine.
Love that.
Yeah, Ricardo yeah. And
And you said he's going to rerun for president. He's going to rerun for president.
Yeah, I think he's rerunning Martin Torrijos too, which is the other person that I can introduce you. And Vivian Torrijos, she is a leader. She is a boss lady, and she did a lot of work with the United Nations when she was a first lady too. So there is a few interesting people. If I would have a podcast,
yeah.
I would like to have in my podcast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would love to. Mm-hmm. Parker, you want to go down to Panama and interview some of these
Ricardo,
folks?
Ricardo, Vivian, I think there's some very interesting people there yeah. that you can interview.
I love it. Okay, I'm going to take you up on that.
Yeah, and there is a few people. I don't know if Jack... Mm-hmm. I think I
Jack McCall?
Jack Dorsey.
Oh, Jack Dorsey.
Yeah,
okay.
I think he changed his phone number after he sold Twitter to Elon. I cannot
You're
connect.
No longer in contact. No. Yeah. Well, he had a nice exit.
He's a very nice guy. Very, very humble. Okay. Very quiet. And when I met him, he was nobody recognized him. Like
44 billion will do that to you.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
I still have the Twitter account and I don't use it.
No?
No.
What platforms are you on?
Instagram.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Facebook.
Okay.
And recently in Instagram and Facebook, because as I told you, I had my marketing company for years in Panama, and I know how much work is
yeah.
that. Okay. Yeah. You have to maintain. As you start doing that, you have to keep it running. I did it for years for companies, and I didn't want to put myself in that position. So when I started here in the U.S. and I started with a multifamily investment firm, I didn't want to do any social media. I actually started raising money with people that I knew or referrals. I didn't want to create a brand, okay? And I didn't want to be on the spot. I did that, okay, in the other two countries that I was.
Okay.
Like, I didn't want to be on the spot. But then AI came. Actually, when we met in Orlando, I was speaking at that event on AI and multifamily.
Were you really?
Yeah.
Okay.
The day before you speak, I was speaking on AI and multifamily market trends.
I always say, you know, as a real estate investor, entrepreneur in today's age, I mean, it's 2024, there's a lot of technology out there. And so you got AI, you got social media, to name a few. And so I would say as a company or an entrepreneur, if you are not utilizing technology to your advantage, it is almost impossible for you to compete with other folks that are utilizing all this technology. And so
100%.
I'd be curious to learn. Well, I actually watched some of your panel, by the way. I watched like the first 15 minutes of the panel, and it was really good. But I had to go grab a bite to eat because I was speaking, I believe, like an hour after you. So I left to go grab a bite and I came back. But that said, what are a couple AI maybe strategies that you could implement on the multifamily side?
As a busy real estate investor or entrepreneur, time is money and first impression is everything. Every day to make it easy on myself, I wear Built Basics clothing. Whether you're a girl or guy looking for workout gear, joggers, shirts, button-downs, hats, or shoes, Built's got you covered. Super comfortable, tight in all the right places to make you look fresh and clean all the time. Visit BuiltBasics.com and use promo code SUMMERS20 to receive 20% off of your order. Again, that's BuiltBasics.com. That's BuiltBasics.com. Use promo code SUMMERS20 to receive 20% off of your order. Now back to the show.
Yeah. AI is the biggest technology and the most important technology that we have right now. And I believe that AI is the biggest breakthrough as well in the whole history since the discovery of fire electricity.
Mm-hmm.
It is much bigger than social media. It is much bigger than the internet. What is happening with AI, if you don't understand it right now and you're just closing your ears to AI, I believe that your company is going to disappear in 5 years, right? Because The only way that you can compete right now in this environment in any business is using technology. So, and right now you're buying boutique hotels. Mm-hmm. Okay? I'm buying multifamily. Mm-hmm. People are buying businesses from baby boomers that are tired and they want to retire. What do you think is going to make the difference in between your boutique hotel and what you're doing right now? Is not only going to be the renovation that you do or in the business that someone else is buying from a baby boomer. It's going to be the technology. Now, AI is as good, is good for two reasons. Okay. One, because it's helping you to save money and it's helping you to make money. Okay. So if you have a technology that can actually and exponentially grow, okay, whatever you are doing by 10 times, okay, and you can save 10 times of your time and you can do 10 times more and you have 5 employees, now you have a corporation of 50 people.
Mm.
If they are leveraging AI.
Mm.
And then on the
more
other
output.
Side.
More output for the same amount of input.
Right.
Yeah.
So Peter Diamandis always said that the next $1 billion company is going to be just with 3 people. Because what
really?
Everything else is AI. Now, when I hire
That's
someone
crazy.
In my company, yes, it's crazy. And if you hear about Peter Diamandis' podcast, he's always about moonshots and AI and what's going to happen with AI and how AI is creating a world of abundance. It's not only abundance of money, but abundance of health, abundance of food as well. Okay. It's all with AI. But we are right now in a very basic part of AI. However, what happened in the last 2 years, this technology has improved exponentially so fast that human brain is not able to catch up to what is happening. And it's going to keep the same, okay, for the next year until we get to AGI, which is artificial general intelligence.
What is that?
That's when the AI is smarter than the human and can do the same or things better than the human. We are not there yet, but look what Elon Musk is doing in robotics. Okay. Like we're almost there. And Ray Kurzweil, if you know who Ray Kurzweil is, he's a futurist and he has been talking about AI for the last 40 to 50 years. His predictions has been very accurate, and he believes that we will reach AGI by 2030 and a superhuman by 2045.
What's a superhuman?
Someone that is way, that can do exactly what you can do, can look exactly how you can do, and is smarter than you.
Wow.
In 20 years only.
Whoa.
Okay.
And if That's kind of scary.
Yeah, it is pretty scary. I don't go all the way there. Because it's scary. But if you think what is happening right now, look at Neuralink with Elon Musk. He's already created a computer chip that goes in your head.
Mm.
So you only have to think and the AI can react. Right now we are in that you talk to the AI, the AI respond to you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And it's very impressive and we can do many things. We can do predictive analytics, we can do predicting prices, we can do predicting personalities, so you can know exactly who you are meeting with before meeting that person. I know about you probably more of what you know, okay, if I run a predictive personality. And that's right now. So the technology is moving really fast, and I do believe that in 5 years we'll be pretty close to that.
So with the Neuralink, I know that's one of his companies. By the way, I was having dinner. This is like 3 weeks ago, and I think it was a Monday night. Having dinner in my place. I live in a high-rise downtown here in San Diego, and I look over, and I literally see it's like sunset. It's during sunset, and I see this big like rocket just going over the bay, and it looks like a UFO, but I'm like, oh my gosh, that's Elon Musk, SpaceX.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he's going up there, they're building, he's helping the US government build, spy satellite. And, you know, just kind of puts it in perspective. It's like, there's levels to the game, right? It's, you know, you have entrepreneurs and you have folks that own bigger businesses with 500 plus employees. And then you got folks like Steve Ballmer and Mark Cuban. And then you got a whole nother level that's like, you know, Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk. And these guys are, you know, Moon the wealthiest man in the world, but also the most innovative. And, you know, it's impressive that, you know, so many of Elon Musk's companies have become billion-dollar companies like that. And to see all the success is just amazing. But to, you know, just be looking out my you know, my balcony on a Monday night and dinner and just see this rocket launching over and to think, man, that's Elon Musk. That's crazy. And it really just puts everything into perspective.
Well, he believed that he's going to take people to Mars. Did you believe that?
Now, they're already doing SpaceX taking people to the moon, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's already
But
thing.
The moon is in the past.
How long would it take to go to Mars?
I don't know. I don't know the answer on that, but he's working on getting people to Mars. That's his goal, okay?
Yeah.
And on the moon, I think that a little bit jumping here, okay? Icon, do you know the Icon company? They are the ones that are doing the 3D printing houses, okay? Mm-hmm. They are building a 3D printing space based in the moon right now. Mm-hmm. 3D printing.
3D printing space on the moon?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
That means that they're building a building, okay? They're making a building in the moon.
On the moon, wow.
On the moon. They're making a building on the moon with the 3D printing machine technology, okay? And that's how they're building on the moon.
Mm.
3D printing, that's another part of the
future. What are they going to do there?
I have no idea.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. So we have to do some research. But what is interesting is that they're already building there, okay? And the way that they're building is with 3D printing. Mm. So if they're building there with 3D printing.
Yeah.
So why we're still not building here with 3D printing?
Right. So with Elon's Neuralink, what exactly are they doing there? You said there's a chip that goes into the back of someone's head. And what is that chip do?
So the chip is with a robot, okay? A robot do like a very precise.
Oh, so does it go into a human being? It goes into a
is.
Robot.
No, the robots do the surgery. The surgery cannot be done by a human hand. It has to be with a machine. And it's a very small chip that goes in the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And then very interesting because people like Stephen Hopkins that was not able to talk, okay, can use something like that and just thinking they can use the keyboard of the computer or they can communicate with their AI and the AI will be able to do things. So at one point, you're not going to be able, you don't need to talk for the AI to understand what you want. And the other
That's
people.
Crazy.
It's like your phone, you are connected to your phone all the time. What's going to be the difference or your phone? Like if you lose your phone, you have more anxiety than if you lose something else.
Oh, for sure. Without a doubt.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So what is the difference of having your phone in your hand all the time that probably having a chip here?
Mm.
Or your phone numbers are there. You just think and call the person. It sounds crazy, but I think that's where we're going.
That's the future.
Yeah, I think that's the future.
Wow.
And my kids right now, they're 3 years old, my younger kids, and they are talking to Alexa and they barely talk. And I was listening to the last week and they were talking to Alexa and Alexa was understanding what they were saying. I was like, this is crazy. They will grow in a world thinking that AI is just part of your life.
Yeah.
You just talk to machines, machines talk back to you, machines help you. Like it's a whole different world. And going back to businesses, if that's where we are right now, how do you think you're going to compete in businesses? If you keep doing things the same way that you're doing it right now, how do you think your company is going to compete if your employees does not understand how to leverage their time and their brain with AI? So right now, everything is about collective intelligence. So you have human intelligence, you have artificial intelligence, it's collective intelligence. And I think it's going to be like that for a long time. But if your employees, your company is not leveraging AI, you're not going to be able to compete. Think about your boutique hotel.
Mm-hmm. Okay?
How technology is going to help you to reduce payroll, to increase the occupancy, okay? To predict so many things that a human brain cannot do. Okay?
No.
How someone else that is not doing that is going to be able to compete with your hotel.
Right. Okay?
That's going to be tough. So I think that for the next 5 to 10 years, okay, it's going to be a really important competitive advantage that you understand AI and you use it in your business. At some point, what's going to happen is that the other businesses that are not using AI are going to disappear, and then everybody will have to compete, okay, in a different way, because everybody will be leveraging AI. I don't think businesses are going to survive after 2030 if you are not using technology. It's just like fat, period.
Yeah, no, absolutely. We do a lot of podcasts here, and so Parker always he shoots the podcast and he chops them up into these shorts. But I think we downloaded like some sort of like software that even like transcribes and does a lot of the captions. And like literally, you just plug it in, and it just whips up these captions pretty quickly. And then he goes in there, but he puts a lot of touches on there to make them look better. But that said, I mean, that's just one example.
And that's the low
like
hanging fruit.
5 years ago, 10 years ago, that's like unfathomable. I mean, you know,
even 1.5 year ago, mm-hmm. that's pretty new, actually. Yeah. Two years ago,
you have that on the Instagram app. You know,
you have it on Instagram.
Shoot a little quick little video and then auto captions.
Marketing is the low-hanging fruit for AI. So there is a lot of and a lot of help that you can get with AI tools. And I was actually telling you that the reason I am in social media right now is because I can leverage my team on AI. I didn't want it to have all this work on me or even in my team.
Yeah.
So marketing is very important for AI, you know, creating captions, creating the whole marketing strategy. Before, you needed a 5-team in your marketing team and 5 people in your marketing team. Right now, you just need 1 person that understand AI, and you can have your own marketing running smoothly. And the same way with acquisitions. We use AI for predictive analytics. We use AI for predictive pricing. We use AI to underwrite multifamily.
To underwrite?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. Give me an example of that. Now I'm interested. How do you use AI to underwrite?
Well, there are 2 levels,
okay?
2 or 3 levels of using AI to underwrite. There is the basic level, which is when you're starting, you don't have a budget, you are a small operator, or you're trying to find something for yourself. You can use tools like ChatGPT to underwrite the deal. So you can give ChatGPT a basic information, and ChatGPT can predict you the model of, okay, what's the price that you need to buy depending on the cash on cash that you need and how the projections are going to look like. So that is the easy way when you don't have a budget.
Okay? Mm.
But right now, there are other companies that has been working on underwriting tools that has now integrated the AI part. And you can plug, for example, your T12 on your rent roll, and just the AI is taking the information, put it in the model, projecting everything for you depending that of what you need. And before, it would take probably 2 hours to go on Excel and do a whole analysis of a property.
It could be a lot longer too, depending on the extent.
2 hours just to put the numbers, pass the numbers from a rent roll to T12 to an Excel document, and then do that 10-year projections. And then just making sure that the Excel is working correctly and you're not missing a formula or things like that. It's at least 2 to 4 hours. Now the AI, you just plug the information, the T12 and PDF, the rent roll, and then you just let the AI to do everything. So you can have a full underwriting in 10 minutes. Then you go to the predicted pricing and predicted analysis, and then it can give you a prediction of how you can sell this deal based in a lot of data. Okay.
That's pretty crazy.
So what I can do, probably 100 deals, someone else that is using an Excel can do 10.
Yeah.
How do you compete with that?
You can compete. And you'll be able to find better quality deals quicker because of that.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. Give me another example to where you would use AI to, you know, benefit your multifamily or real estate investing in general operation.
What about investor relations? When you're talking to investors, we use predictive personality. And this AI, what it does is that it gives me a DISC report. Have you used this report? DISC?
Yeah.
Report?
Yeah.
So it's going to give me a DISC report of that person. Okay. How do I have to talk to that person? How do I have to sell? How do I have to write? Everybody's different. So you are an S, I am a D. How do I know that? Because my assistant runs the predictive personality on you.
Really?
Yes, of course. She does that for every time I go to a podcast. I get a one page, the same page that you got there, but I get a predictive personality. And it tells me everything about how do I have to talk to you? How do I have to look if I want to create a rapport with you?
Whoa. Okay. What so I've actually never took the test. So what you saying that I'm an S and you're a D.
Yeah.
Okay. What is an S?
Okay. A D is someone that is very strong. Okay. Is someone that is doing things. I have to get things done. Okay. No matter what. I can go. Probably sometimes I don't consider the people around. Okay. But I have to get things done. Okay. As an S, you're probably more thinking about what's in your environment around, okay? And you're more concerned about what is the people around you. I can give you that page. I'm going to give you the page, actually, after we finish the after we finish the podcast. And then you can read it and you can tell me if it's that you. I have done that a few times and in two podcasts, and they were pretty shocked to know that. And I do it as a test because I want to know, like, is this really you?
Now, I got a question. How does your assistant run this personality test on me with if I'm not giving her the answers?
Right.
She doesn't know me.
There is a lot of... Are you on social media?
Yes.
Yes. You are in all social media. Everything that you put on social media is public information. And the AI can actually go to a lot of data points, okay? And probably, I don't know exactly how they do it, but I know it's public information. So if you are in Instagram, if you're in Facebook, and if you're in LinkedIn, what do you have in LinkedIn? You have, where do you go to school? You write your posts. Then what do you do for work? Okay. So it takes a lot of information from the internet, I guess, and it creates a predictive profile of you. I still haven't found one person that tells me, Vanessa, this is completely wrong. This is not me. I still haven't found not even one person. So going back to business, how easier would be for you if you know before talking to someone, how do you have to talk to someone?
Huge. Because in all reality, and I didn't realize this until like a week ago, I saw Layla Hormozi post something. And she said, the way that a good leader will speak to different people will be different from one person to the other, to, you know, your assistant, to an investor, to a client, to a friend. And the way that you speak to everyone is different because everyone has a different personality. And so, you know, if you're trying to convince someone or get someone to do something, the way that you got to communicate to them has to be different, right? And so I thought about that and I was like, it really resonated because I never realized it. I never even thought about it. But, you know, I think I do talk to everyone in my life completely different based on their personality and who they are. And so
how do you know who they are? If you don't know them.
You're right. If I don't know them, I don't know them.
That's a challenge.
I'm talking people that are in my life. But you're right. I mean, if I'm going to go on a podcast and I don't know the host, then yeah, that would be a good way to judge it. That's impressive. Think about investor
relations.
Okay.
This person is talking to 10, 20 people every day.
Okay.
How does this person is going to understand one person or the other? Okay. So you do have a personality and that's how you try to communicate with everybody. But you're completely right. You have to understand what their personality is in order to create rapport with that person. So one of the things that they teach you when they are teaching you sales, okay, is how you can mirror someone.
Okay.
So if you are doing that and I do this.
Yeah.
Now I'm mirroring you.
Yes.
And you probably don't realize that I'm doing this, but now I create rapport with you.
Mm. Okay.
Just because I'm sitting the same way that you're sitting.
Mm.
And then if you move your hand and I do this, okay. Those are sales thing that's why it's important to, when you're selling to someone, to do it on Zoom, okay, or in person. So you can do those type of things and to create rapport. If someone do this, I do this as well, okay. Now, the other part is like, that is like the physical, that is, is not the language, but it's just like creating and mirroring the same thing that you're doing. But you also have to understand the personality of the person, so you know how friendly you want to be with that person. If that person wants you to ask about their personal life or not, if that person wants you to ask about their family, Do you think everybody wants to jump on a call with you and ask you, how was your day? And how is your family doing? And how are your kids?
Maybe not deep conversation, but I think most people would like, hey, how's everything going? Like, how's your day going? Blah, blah, blah. Like a little warm intro before you just jump right into it.
If you're talking to a D, okay, You can go right straight to the point. Hey, really? Nice to see you. Okay. Can we jump in the boat?
And that's
yes,
you.
That's me.
We've had a lot of small talk, though, since you came into the studio.
Yeah. Yeah, but if you're talking to someone that is a high D and is in a 30-minute conversation, is giving you a 50-minute conversation, okay, we don't want to go into that. And I do it because I have a lot of investors, and I know which ones you have to be more friendly or more personal than the others. But having an AI telling you what is the personality of that person, it's a huge game changer for selling or for investor relation, because now you know how much you can invest in one part, how you sell to that person, what is the risk tolerance. Are you low risk or high risk?
I have a relatively high risk tolerance, but 5 years ago, I had a low risk tolerance. And it wasn't until I got into entrepreneurship and real estate investing to where I took risk and it was scary. And then I figured it out. And then, you know, you run into more problems and you take more risk and then you figure it out. And then you gain more and more confidence. And so now I would say I have a really high risk tolerance because I, you know, issues and problems are inevitable in the journey of entrepreneurship. But now I have the confidence because I've solved so many problems that I have the confidence that no matter what happens, I know I'll figure it out. You know what I mean?
You are low risk person.
I'm a low risk person?
You are a low risk person in your, you have adapted to a high risk.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yes.
But you are a low risk person.
Yes, naturally.
Yeah. And it gets very uncomfortable for you going a high risk. And then you hesitate sometimes. And then probably now because you are an entrepreneur and now you have seen that things work for you. Now you have proof of concept. Mm-hmm. And now you can tolerate a higher risk.
Mm.
That's what my page said about you.
Really?
Yes.
No way. That's crazy.
That's what my page. Now, yeah, I'm a high risk person.
I'm very comfortable being uncomfortable now. Mm-hmm. And I would say one of the reasons I broke up with my old partners, I used to buy real estate with two old partners. And the reason I decided to break up with them is because they had a very low risk tolerance and I had a higher risk tolerance. And so I felt like, you know, in entrepreneurship, you have to be okay with some of the unknown. There's going to be assumptions. There's going to be unknown. But you have to take a little bit of risk in order to have some sort of reward. And it's calculated risk, right? But that said, it's funny that you mentioned that because I was traditionally having a low risk tolerance. And now I've just through all the reps and all the, the different journeys that we go through in entrepreneurship, I have become a person that has a high risk tolerance now.
Yeah. Now, in my case, I'm a high risk person. I've been always a high risk person. I have done crazy things since I was 15 without thinking that what the consequences are going to be. So now this has shown me that I need to understand more how to have a more conservative view to the risk because I'm also managing other people's money. Now, your investors are going to be grateful that you have certain low risk tolerance, okay? Because then you analyze a lot of things, okay? You analyze when they're asking them for money, you analyze that so well because naturally your low risk is telling you that you have to understand where you're going, okay? And then your path on entrepreneurship is telling you that you have to take risks and now it's giving you the certainty to take risks. But in my case, I'm the opposite. I'm like a high risk person. All the way, and I have to do the opposite than you.
Yeah.
So that's all things that you can get with the AI, and I think it's very helpful, the predictive analysis to get to know people. And otherwise, you need to be a psychologist. you need to be a psychology with your wife, with your friends. I mean, now with investors and with the people that you want to create a relationship, it's really hard. And before, years ago, before social media and the phone and this machine, we just had connections with human, probably five people during the day, right? Now you are connecting with people every 30 minutes. So it's really hard to catch up. That being said, I believe that AI is the future and every company should be using AI. My employees, the first thing that I ask is that they take my course. I have an online course where we teach about AI, the basics of AI, to entrepreneurs. Okay. Because especially for entrepreneurs, it's a game-changing tool, right? It's a game-changing technology. Just by yourself, starting a business without people around, without money to hire a lot of employees. So AI is going to make a huge difference. So for my employees, it's always that I ask, just take the course for 1 week. They go immerse on that and they come back in a AI high.
I like that. I might have to have some of my team take your course.
Yes, yes.
How long is that course?
We have about 36 lessons.
Okay.
But you can do it in a weekend if you do all the classes. It's a lot of hours. But the interesting part is that when you start taking all the classes and then you start seeing the possibilities, you know about the pie of knowledge, right? The pie of knowledge is, where is your knowledge in your brain? So there is a percentage that is a big percentage of things that you don't know that you don't know. And there is another tiny part is what you know that you know and what you know that you don't know. So you know that you don't know to speak Mandarin, okay? But AI right now is then you don't know that you don't know. So when people start discovering things that they never imagined and in their brain was not, it was not even there, okay?
Yeah.
The reality is like you open up your brain to a, wow, this is crazy, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And that's when people start getting into high, and it's very exciting. It's very exciting to understand how you can do and to understand that, wow, I've been doing this, that it's taking me 3 hours when I can use this AI and it would take me 10 minutes.
Right.
That's crazy. So I believe it's very important for entrepreneurs to jump into that right now, or your employees as well. Okay. I wouldn't hire anyone that is not using AI right now.
Yeah. That's
nobody,
powerful.
Nobody. People say AI is going to replace people.
Yeah.
In the next 5 years, I think that people that use AI is going to replace people that does not use AI. Because if you have two employees and one can get done 10 times the same thing that the other one, which one is performing better?
Yeah.
Okay. This one, because it's using, it's leveraging in AI. So I wouldn't hire anyone that is opposite to technology, is opposite to AI, or does not know the basics of AI.
So I got to ask you, you have five kids and multiple companies. Do you still have all these companies or did you exit?
I have three.
You have
of
three.
Them. Six companies.
So, and you have three of them are active.
Three active.
So three active companies, you got five kids and you're doing real estate. Is real estate one of the three companies?
Yes.
Okay. So, what are the three companies? And then what is your biggest challenge with, juggling five kids and three companies?
I love that question. Thank you so much for asking. And I love it because most of the time, if you have my husband here, okay, and my husband is running the production company, okay, which is one of the six companies, it's a production company, you will never ask that question to my husband. How do you manage your company and how do you manage your five kids? His answer will be, my wife does.
okay.
Right? Okay. And I love that you asked that question because so many women struggle to manage their companies and their house and their husbands and their kids. And I was talking to some other women last week at that event. And when I was telling them, it was completely new for them. So like, how do you manage your business and your house if you don't know what I don't know, what I know?
Yeah.
Because I don't know how you would do it.
Mm-hmm.
And to answer your question, Yes, I do have three companies that are active. One is the company that my husband runs, which is a production and publishing company for cars. He does production for cars and manufacturers. Manufacturers hiring us to do videos for the Hispanic community in the United States. So everything that we do is in Spanish and it's about cars. Then I have the real estate investment firm, Venus Capital Partner. And then I have this project, which is Luna X. And it's the coaching program to teach entrepreneurs about AI. Mm. And the last one, which is not a company, but it's a project that I'm very in love with, is a book for kids. Okay, that I'm not the author of the book, but these women created this amazing book for kids about compassion and kindness. And I'm working on editing the book in Spanish. So we launched that to the Hispanic community. Okay, but I think that being a women entrepreneur and also having five kids, the only way that you can do it is that if you manage your house as you manage your business. So how do you create a successful business? Okay. You have to have systems, processes, leverage with people, okay, technology.
Be disciplined.
Be disciplined. And I always say that I run my house like a military base as well. I do the same. I have systems and processes with my house. I leverage with people, okay? I pick and choose very careful where I spend my time when I'm not working as well. When I'm working, okay, but when I'm not working as well. I teach my people, okay, how they have to think, how they have to make decisions, okay? And there are a lot of things that I don't do in my house. So if I have to pick and choose in between, for example, cooking and just taking my kids to the park.
Yeah.
I'm taking my kids to the park. I have someone that's cooking for me. Now, if I love cooking and I want to cook, I will cook. But that's something that I love, okay, and it's filling my heart, and probably I will cook with my kids. But it's not that I have to cook.
It's not the best use of your time.
It's not the use of my time. So the same way that I manage my business is the same way that I manage my house. And yeah, my husband says that I run it like a military base. Everybody has to know what to do, what is their position, how to think. Okay. I leverage a lot of my team. Okay. I have two or three people working with me, and there's things that I don't let them to do that I get to do. For example, I get to drive my kids to school. This is a job that I don't want anybody else to do.
Yeah.
I want to drive my kids to school. I want to pick up my kids from school. But I don't want to cook every day. I don't clean my house. I know how to clean my house. Okay. I always clean my house. I come from a very humble family. But I don't have to do it right now. I want to use that time to go on a date with my husband. My calendar, you will see my calendar. It's like everything in my calendar is there. Even my personal time. I have my day with my husband in my calendar. I have the time that I take my kids to do something. Okay. I schedule everything in my calendar, and there are things that you cannot move from my calendar. It's my goal time, which is the things that it fills my heart, the time with my family. So my assistant can work around my calendar, but she knows that my goal time is no negotiable. So I have those things. So everything, I run everything like a business.
Yeah, I love that. And I think you could almost argue that, you know, becoming a entrepreneur and getting the right systems and processes down in your business will actually make your family life and your personal life a little bit less chaotic and a little bit more organized and more efficient, if you would, because you can implement a lot of those same practices in your personal life. And if you do it correctly, I don't have kids, but one day I want to have kids. I think maybe the kids will see that and they'll be inspired as well.
I love that my kids are growing in a family of two entrepreneurs. Actually, I was invited to my son's school to be on the career day. You know, they do this career day they take the police person and the hairdresser and blah, blah, blah. And I was there and I was talking about entrepreneurship. So it was very impressive to see the faces of these little kids six, seven, 10 years old, surprised to listen to me talking about entrepreneurship and what an entrepreneur is. How do you work as an entrepreneur? What do you do as an entrepreneur? What do you study if you want to be an entrepreneur? These kids were in awe. I will see their faces and I will tell them what I do. One of the kids asked me, because I asked them, what is the benefit of being an entrepreneur? What do you think is the benefit of being an entrepreneur? And she said, because you have to go to the office less time. And I was like, I don't have an office. I work from my home if I want to. They were like, really? They some kids don't know, okay, that entrepreneurship is actually something that you can do with your life.
I was one of those people. I didn't know until my early 30s. And so it's completely changed my life.
And I love that my kids are growing way too, and they see it. And the other thing that I do with my kids that I never tell them that I'm working. Okay. I don't want them to think that mommy is away because mommy is working. So I was coming here and my son, my 10 years old, asked me, Mom, are you speaking or are you learning? I was like, I'm gonna speak. Because I try to let them understand the why of the think instead of the working. So if I go to a conference and tell them I'm learning, okay, mommy's going to go and it's going to learn about real estate. And if I go speaking, mommy's going to go and it's going to speak and it's going to teach people and it's going to help people. If I'm in a phone call with investors, mommy's helping investors, okay, to make decisions with their money. So I want them to see a bigger picture and know a working 9 to 5. So now they're working, understanding that mommy is doing this, not because of them, because I actually don't work for them. Thanks God, they're all healthy, okay? And they don't have any issues. And I know that they will figure it out at one point. Okay. I'm working, I'm doing this because I like it and it's my passion. I'm an entrepreneur. I think I will be opening another company even if I'm 70 years old. Yeah.
You're addicted to the game. We all are.
Yeah.
We all are.
So I like them to think, okay, that you don't have to grow up and just work for someone else. Okay. So I like them to understand that I like what I do and why I'm doing it. And I make money with that too.
That's the name of the game. Well, Vanessa, I appreciate you coming out, hanging out with us. And the good thing is we got a meetup here in about 20 minutes and we get to go hang out more at the meetup. So I appreciate you hanging out. And where can listeners get in touch with you?
Instagram, Vanessa Venus Capital, or LinkedIn, Vanessa Alfaro, or Facebook, or our website, venuspartners.com.
There it is. Well, appreciate you coming out and keep inspiring. We'll have to get you back on here maybe next year and talk a little bit more shop. But she's Vanessa Alfaro. I'm Rich Summers. Listeners, thanks for tuning in. We'll see you in the next one. Peace.